Well, I think that's the whole point, isn't it? I think that, yes, because it is it's a gestalt. I think what we live in is a gestalt of overlapping fields. So we're living in the sense with the sense of, you know, whatever my experience is, but my experience isn't separate from my history. It's not separate also from the history of the of my family, my culture, and even actually the place that I'm in. You know, so the place that we're in, we're sitting in this room, which has its own particular history for all of us, but it's got a history beyond us. We're sitting in Glastonbury, which is has its own history, and we're sitting with, if you like, our sexuality, our maleness, our femaleness, our sexual preference, our sexual history. We're sitting with the idea of what is it to be a human being? You know, what is it to be a white European human being? Oh no, not European, sorry, no, British human being. sorry, couldn't resist it. But so there are constantly these overlapping fields, some of which are more prominent at any one point in time. And of course, very deep down, there's you know, what is it to be a human being in connection with the living world? You know, so the sense of connection of nature, the world, the land, you could say, and to be a human being. Well, what? So, and in a way, that's going on all the time. I mean, that's sort of, now mostly we're not conscious of it because we're mostly doing our thing in our lives, until, you know, things jolt us so awake or something happens to us that makes us reflect. But in a sense, we are the sort of fulcrum or the anchor of many different processes. And we are ourselves this kind of generative source. So we are, we're not passive in that, we're actively collaborating with the other fields, the other possibilities, the other experiences to create our sense of self and our sense of world. Now, if we look, just going to come to this diagram on the board, which is a diagram of the tree of life, and I just want to look for a moment at the sort of, if you like, the generation of image from within. There's also images that come from without, but I'm just going to start. So, just to come to stand here, so you don't get in the way, but I can see it. Okay, so we start in a way. This tree of life really is an image of depth, really. So the place is at the top, which we called Keter, the crown, is also the root of the tree. It's the sort of the beginning place. It's the mysterious origin. Now, connected with that, we have these two spheres that represent deep will and deep imagination. And And in a certain sense, that deepest part of the tree we're not really aware of, because that is accessed only through the sphere of Da'at, which is the sphere of the knowing of not knowing, so the field of mystery. So there is this deeper place down which we know only as it emerges from the pool of mystery, in a sense. Perception. Yeah, so the idea of conception here, why I've put the word conception there, is the coming together. So there's this mysterious origin, and we have the coming together, if you like, of an intention with what I've called a deep image. Now, a deep image is not it's like a matrix, a matrices of something that will produce a formed image, the in expression. At this point, it really hasn't even got any form, but it's like a template. It is a bit like the kind of the DNA possibility. So it's like this. So in a certain sense, it is a bit. Well, one way you can think of it as the sort of, you can think of it as the ovum, and the deep will as the kind of, as the sperm, the spark that ignites something, so that so that a new possibility starts to arrive. Now, that idea of conception, of course, is the coming together of the spark and the deep image, or the sperm and the ovum, that creates the possibility of new life. Something new emerges. Now, the whole thing about human beings is that we are constantly creating. We don't know that we are, and because of the way our culture deals with the process of creation, we've got creative people, are very special people that produce objects that we can sell for high value. But actually the reality is we are constantly creating our sense of self and world. And so because what we're trying to do is create stability. We create a world that we can bear to live in. And so that place of conception is it comes in every moment, and actually, because in each moment everything dissolves and everything recreates itself. But it's happening so quickly that we don't know that. We think we're living in a stable kind of world. And we are living in a stable world, but it's a dynamic stability caused by sort of being able to keep our balance amidst the great fields of overlapping forces and energies that we are contributing to. Now what happens is that from the immediate moment of conception, if we have these two energies that kick into play of growth and expansion and boundary and clarification. So these things can be kind of quite out of whack depending on our kind of history and our experience of ourselves, but in a kind of a balanced thing, as a form grows and develops, it also becomes clarified and checked. Now anyone who, if you ever do any writing, you kind of what you find is you have this idea, this creative idea comes, you start to expand, you write, you develop, you grow, the idea grows, and if you're not careful, it becomes this monstrous epic of rambling kind of connected ideas. So what you have to do is simultaneously clarify, refine the form, because the whole point about the kind of the creative image, the image must reflect the intention as clearly as possible. Now, very, very baroque ideas, baroque forms, generally speaking, don't work because they produce quite a lot of confusion and over elaboration. So the process really of bringing together the growth with the clarifying, binding, it's like a life energy and a death energy that have to collaborate together to find balance, to find something, to find a sort of a form which hasn't yet a finished form, but it creates a balance of something that has intentionality and is anchored in a shape that reflects the original intention. So, for example, when we're looking at the meditation, the Kabbalistic cross form is a form, but it has a form, but its intention is to produce a sense of centeredness, connection, and balance. The middle pillar exercise is designed to produce a sense of energetic awakening and flow. It's a fountain of flow, right? The form is, in both these cases, these forms are kind of forms that are linked and that hold a very specific intention. The exercise of going into the kind of pool and allowing the kind of, if you like, the coming into this image of the skeleton and the flesh arising on the form is linked to this whole idea. Because the sort of the skeleton, if you like, the bone of the matter is the intention, is the kind of, this is the essence of something that is then needs to acquire density and flesh and expression in order to manifest. And so, having found the kind of balance point, if you like, where the form and the intention are conjoined, what then starts to happen is the image acquires feeling tone, it acquires concept, it starts to become manifest, it then starts to acquire energetic reality before then expressing itself in the sense of solidity in coming into expression. Now, obviously, we can see there for writing a piece of work, or you can see how something, you get a sort of, you create a form, you edit it, you get the sort of having edited or cut it back, you get a deeper sense of intentionality and expression. You get to feel about it, your thoughts organize more, and then you in a rush, sometimes you produce a finished article that affects things. Now, that's obviously when you're producing a sort of an object. But actually, that's a process that's going on all the time as you negotiate your presence in the world. So you get up, you become present, how you are this morning, you become, you sort of, you notice how you are, you notice how the world is. You appear to yourself and the world appears to you. Right, this is an interlocking of the sense of self and world. You may find you may be happy this morning, you may be sad this morning, you may be angry, you may be, but you've got to get yourself up and out. You've got to come to this group. You've got to, so whatever you do, you have to create a kind of a sense of connectedness with here I am, this is what I'm doing, and you create a balance in your world, which will have feelings, thoughts, a sense of energy, and just brings you present into the middle of your world. Now that's going on all the time in all of us, so the sense of we are continually, and so, you know, I'm just describing that as a slightly linear process, but of course it's not. Where it's happening, there's layers of this going on all the time. There's not one process, these are many, many processes happening all the time. But produce this sense of this is me, I know myself, I'm stable here, I understand, you know, I have a sense of you all and how we relate together, and you're part of my image of the world, part of my image of me. So we reflect each other. So this kind of this image, this is the other reason I put the mirror in the middle, because this is, we create stability, but there's this but we're reflecting back on each other all the time, right? So this is a sort of, what we're operating in is a great sea of reflective energies, and keeping our balance in the middle of this is not so easy. So particularly once we start to get conscious about it, because actually mostly the balance is unconscious, right? Here I am, this is my world, it doesn't change much. People behave as I expect them to, I behave as I expect myself to. And it sort of goes all right until it doesn't. You know, that's how it goes. But once you start to be conscious of it, right, this is always the disruptive thing of any growth process. But back at me, I'm now in the middle of all this field of forces, and oh God. And so once you start to become conscious, you start to lose balance, inevitably, because you don't, oh my God, I'm doing that, and I'm doing this, and oh, am I? You know, and so the process of the work is very much about losing balance, finding balance, readjusting, bringing in the, so this is this idea of the bones and the flesh is quite important. You have to keep coming back to the bones of yourself. Where am I? Who am I? What is my intention? Intention maybe to be present. Okay, be present. Breathe, come into the body, find the anchoring in the body. To sort of come away from the kind of sense of overwhelm, reach out again, keep relating to this kind of, and this is why these processes are so difficult and why change is so difficult, because once you start to change, any one change overbalances everything else. Then you have to come back, find a new balance. But as you get used to, the key, very, very key thing really, is getting used to that experience of being out of balance and learning how to find balance. So in a sense, that kind of place of coming back into yourself, coming back to some sense of center, connecting to the kind of flow of your own being, connecting to your own inner stillness, listening to that and then allowing, noticing what aspect of yourself steps forward to meet the conditions, internal and external, that are arising. So for example, I'm being a therapist, right? However I am in my work, however I am, you know, if I'm irritable and my knee's hurting me, I'm sort of not in the mood for work that day, I'm kind of, you know, I sit down in the therapist chair and I'm waiting for my client to come, and another aspect of me steps forward. It doesn't take away the other bits. The other bit's still irritable, knee's still hurting, kind of wishing I was on the beach somewhere having a drink. But I meet another aspect of, you know, out of that, this well of creativity, this other aspect of me, because I intend to be a therapist, I like being a therapist, I am a therapist. And so that, a new gestalt form that doesn't take away the other parts of myself, but is a form, a living image that holds me. The intention of being a therapist, you know, which in my case is a form that I've, you know, like some others of you, I've worked on for many, many years, is a form and an intention that holds me, that it's an aspect of my own creativity that provides a certain degree of useful stability. Right, so it's now if I'm nothing, it's dangerous, because if I'm nothing but a therapist, if I am, you know, just this sort of blank mechanical therapist, and that my creativity and living capacity can't move through it, well, it becomes a dead form, it becomes idle again. So the whole of these images, they focus the deeper light of awareness. So if I so when I'm going to be a therapist, however I am, that form holds an intention that helps hold me in the activity of relationship I'm about to participate in. And like, part of my responsibility is I need to make sure that form is a lucid form. It's a form that is connected with that mysterious living presence that's at the root of creativity, and not turn it into some idol where I just am locked away from the creative life, and I'm just doing it mechanically. And this is kind of what we do, I think, in a sense, right? We learn, this is how we have this great pool of images, implicit images, that are all linked together. And you could, you know, so when I say self-image, what I mean is self-images. There's hundreds of them. And there's all kinds of possible permutations of them, depending upon what I'm meeting from inside and outside, but they always form a gestalt between the inside and the outside. There's this interlocking that happens. Now, if it happens unconsciously, a lot of time it happens unconsciously, and you know, it's sort of, you know, and so things just repeat themselves. You know, sometimes it's all right; it's no big deal. Sometimes it's not useful. You know, so. So, as I bring awareness into it, that interlocking, that marriage, if you like, between my internal sense and my sense of other, there's the potential for something else to happen and a different image of self to arise to meet the other person. So instead of doing the kind of irritable comments, maybe I just shut up for a moment and just stop myself. And just notice the strangeness of stopping myself, and notice the other possibilities that arise because of that.
And also you've got the effect on the other person then. Yes. Informing you.
Yes, exactly. Well, everything comes back into feedback loops, don't they? So that's the thing, because as you affect, this is a deeply interlocked world. So as I behave differently, there's some effect upon that other person, which then feeds back into me, my sense of myself, my sense of the other. And in a way, I think that's part of the kind of creative process here, really, where we can create new possibilities, or we repeat known possibility, you know. So there's a, You know, one of the things that I think I know is that every time I repeat something, it's not just a repetition, it's a recreation, so something is a bit more solid. I'm not saying that's wrong, sometimes that's really right. It can be very good, you know, to create solidity, consensus can be very important in our lives. It can be create continuity and a good stability and a sort of there's a whole kind of and of course we need that balance to, otherwise there is no balance, right? There's no continuity. This is all about proportionality in some ways. Because balance in the way that I'm talking about is dynamic balance. It's not stuckness. But balance can turn into stuckness because I don't ever let anything overbalance me. I keep everything very, very contained, and I don't ever let the scale swing. Because actually, in the way in which I'm looking at it, the creative process, just the process of life, depends upon the balance continually being overset and continually finding new balance. That's why it's much more like the kind of, you know, wading through a stream, so sort of where you're continually having to kind of find new balance, new possibilities, and learning about the way how to balance and how to wade, how to move forward, how to progress, and each time having to meet the current in a different way, or meet the stones that are underneath you, and maybe at times you have to swim, you know. So that's the only way before sometimes is to swim or to float, or to fall in completely and to let the river take you, right? So that's the point in a way. So there's a sort of infinite flexibility that's needed in a way. Yeah, that's right. Well, it's like you're talking about when you know the waves look brilliant on the beach when you went down the other day. So they look like they're great, and it doesn't work somewhere. So actually, you don't catch the wave in that moment. Another time you catch the wave, and it's somewhere. Okay, if I could just let myself be with that and be with the effect upon me, and allow that capacity to work with the world.
So I'm out of balance, and I'm going, I'm rubbish, I'm failing today, that's out of balance.
Yes, that's right, and that's the danger, because that's the place then where we split away from the process, right? So if we stay with the process, and kind of even if it's a bit of a very annoying process, you know, and even really embracing that place where I think I'm rubbish, I notice that, and sort of let that be part of it rather than, and I shouldn't think that. So and letting that all inform us into the next step of balance. There's a really old Anglo-Saxon word that applies really here. It's a word called kithing. And the word kith is to manifest, to appear in the world. It's related to the word for kith and kin, because it's a practice, a sort of befriending yourself and befriending the world. Because this action, or this creative action of appearing, is of course an act of great vulnerability and intimacy, because as you appear in the world, as you bring, if you like, the creative image that is yourself into relationship with the image of the world, how you bring that image in is important. Now you can, and we do, at times we no doubt do it as in a very defended.
Sorry, how are you spelling it?
K-Y-T-H-I-N-G, kithing.
Y-T-H-I-N-G,
kithing. It's an Anglo-Saxon word, and it relates to a sort of appearing and sort of communing. To kithe, in a way, is to become known to the other and to know the other.
About it, I don't.
Yeah, it is the longing to be known and the longing to know as well. It is that image of, well, it is, so that kith and, you know, if you think of that phrase kith and kin, where it's there's almost that longing for home, longing for connection, longing for community. you know, and the image within it of cooperative community, to know and to love, to be loved and to love.
Hiraeth.
It's got a similar kind of feel. Hiraeth is like that. Hiraeth is that word of longing, that longing, the longing for home, not for just for home, but for the people who are like me, right? So there's it's a very deep need in human being. You know, it's the need, in a way, ultimately probably it's the need for the divine, or the need for the, yeah. It's the need for to be, you know, for there to be no barrier, no kind of, but the art of kaithing, in a sense, is this process that I'm describing of being present with yourself, present with the world, and letting the meeting happen between yourself and whatever aspect of the world. And kaithing is this, you could say, is this... Well, it's sort of like sexual interpenetration or something. It's a sort of known as you and being known and to know. In a way, it's this sphere called the art, the place of mystery, the unknowing knowing, the kind of the place where, out of which, something there's death and life in that place. Like, because as you have the knowing encounter with the world or with another being or an animal or a tree, there's an interchange, there's a sort of fusion. Now when you find that the Welsh bard saying, you know, I am a sword, I am a tree, I am a kind of a, you know, I am a stag of seven tines. Now what they're talking about in a way is this practice of kaithing, of becoming one with aspects of the world, and sort of in that, I've never forgotten once I was in Africa, I spent 4 or 5 months in up a mountain in South Africa and on retreat, and these amazing antelopes, they're called eland. They're massive, absolutely massive eland. They're the sacred animals of the Bushmen, and there's a lot of kind of traditional stuff about it, but they are just amazing things. So I used to go out, you know, walking on the land really, and sort of and it's very wild land, they're up in the Drakensberg Mountains, and I was walking along one time and it is quite deep ravines, so and suddenly out of nowhere an eland jumped out of the ravine, and the eland, I'm about here, the eland lands there, and it's huge, and we have this moment of total sort of shock really, but also kind of openness to each other. I'm doing, fucking hell, it's an eland. He's doing, fucking hell, it's an Ian. You know, and there's a sort of encounter there that passes all the normal boundaries, right? So that as I remember that now, you know, it's very numinous, powerful thing. I don't know what it was like for the eland, but, you know, so we had this extraordinary kind of encounter, which probably for seconds, really, because then he ran off and I just sort of, I was kind of like that. But the thing about these kind of encounters, they sort of stop the world.
Don't reach for your camera.
No, I had no thought of camera. I didn't think I had a camera on me. I'm not very good at photos. But yes, exactly. And if you reach for your camera, you've stepped out of the experience. Because actually, the moment, because the experience of kaithing, and that's always a dramatic version of it, but is that in some ways it stops the world. It reorganizes the interior dialogue that we have between ourselves and the world, because in a certain sense that's the stability that we create is created by continual creative dialogue that's continually describing, subliminal dialogue that's describing ourselves and our relationship to the world. Now the actual experience of kaithing and of meeting and of both the vulnerability but the kind of the experience of being met and of meeting, you know, it's a two-way experience always, just stops everything for a moment and then becomes then a living, that memory becomes a living image within the pool of images, within the story, the complex woven story that we create about ourselves. Now that's still that experience. If I remember that experience and just get kind of conscious with it, just come into it again, I can feel, it's not the saying because I'm not in it now, but I can feel the reflection of that sense of shock and possibility. And so that continues to work within me. And this is how memory works, right? So memory, we have, memory is, we have our memory, which is us, you know, it's what we draw upon when we think, well, who am I? Is this series of potentized images that are continuing to work within us. They have advantages and disadvantages. The advantage of the, for me, of the memory of the eland, as I've just told you, is to remind me of that numinous encounter. The danger of it is if I start getting a bit fascinated by the image and thinking, oh, I should look up what eland are again, maybe I should read up about eland and remember all that. So suddenly, instead of being with the actual experience, I start to create a facsimile of it. And this is the danger of any image. This is again, the image starts to close over and becomes the idol. The iconic aspect of the iconic aspect of that memory of remembering is the sense of shock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's a sense of shock and stopping. Not let's find out about being in Eland, or I should do a memoir of my time in South Africa, or, and I could do a memoir, but that would be for the right reason. Right. So when I remember it, it's the sense of shock that stops something. And then reminds me, then if I stay with that, it reminds me of the function of memory. Memory can bring ourselves really present and wake ourselves up, or it can really put us to sleep in so many ways. Now, and the importance, the act of kaithing is always a present sense of meeting, of knowing and being known. It certainly has that quality of hereith and longing in it, and it has the capacity to open us into something new. Now, something new could involve the past. It does not involve the past. The memory can emerge, but be seen again in this moment, met in a new way. But the intrinsic capacity that it has is always a slightly shocking, vulnerable sense of knowing and being known. And that knowing and being known is, you know, you could have that with a bell, you could have it with a chair, you can have it, you know, there's such, not dependent on a human reaction, there's a sort of sense of togetherness, being kith or kith and kin, understanding and being understood. Now, it's a bit challenging if you think of a chair understanding you. I don't mean that in an anthropomorphic way, but it's like
is it a kind of non-dual?
Yeah. I was just sensing it there. So I do it with a chair. So if I just do it with this chair, so I have this real feeling of appreciation with the chair. And it's like a oneness with the chair, where I feel the chairness of the chair. Right, so it's not anthropomorphic. You're thinking, oh, "Looky, and I love you sitting on me." It's not that. That would be a fantasy.
It's sure, sentience, insentience. Isn't it?
Yeah, it does. Well, there's a gestalt. You see, the gestalt of me and the chair. Mm. Right, so there's the sense of loving this chair, I suppose, in a funny kind of way, loving it, how it holds me, how it helps my knee, and the sense of being held by it. It fits me. I fit it. Right, so it's that. It's a sort of yeah, it's not Disney anthropomorphic stuff here, but it's about really that sense of relating directly to the world and being related to.
Yeah, sometimes you can do that with, like, I don't know, I've just had it quite recently with those bone flowers.
Yeah.
I saw the flowers and for a moment.
Yeah.
there was no me, it was just the flowers.
Well, as you, that's right.
It became the flowers in some.
That's it, right, that's what I'm talking about. Right? That's that encounter, that's exactly that encounter where there's something, yes, there's no barrier in the way between you and the flowers. Mm. It's that.
Well, I'm sure there's a couple of trees outside in the house. You can feel their sort of awareness of me.
Yeah.
In the kind of, not in an anthropomorphic way, but they have a kind of awareness.
Yeah, there's a sort of sense. Yeah, that's the kind of related, relational sense of you and them. Yeah.
There's a presence. We all have presence, right?
Yeah.
The more present you are, the more you'll have these experiences.
Yeah, that's
right.
Because
they're experiences of genuine reality, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Reality.
That's right.
But I come at it from the negative point of view of when you sort of think, oh, I'm playing the same old record again. You
know, yeah, that's right.
In your life, then you're aware you're having a facsimile experience, aren't you? Mm.
Yeah, that's right.
Because your memory is just put you to sleep. So
that's right, that's right. And of course, conversely, as you notice that, that's the paradox, because as you notice that, of course, you start to wake up, you move out of the facsimile, yeah, into the experience of the real.
That just reminded me of that thing about memory, the way it's put in the Norse stories of Odin's ravens, thought and memory.
Yeah.
And when they go out into the world, they need to find out what's happening.
Yeah.
And what they bring back forms him. But of the two, he's more concerned that memory returns than thoughts, if he has to choose.
Yeah.
Because memory is what informs his being.
Yes, that's right. That's absolutely right, yeah.
What's the word memory and
thought.
Oh, memory and thought.
His early concerns about dementia.
Interesting, yes. This nurse was at the allotment, and she was, and Robin came in really close, and she was telling me about it. And we kind of hold the place like, oh, it's amazing that a bird comes close to a human being.
And then I said,
but actually, if you were the cat and things, birds will come close to cattle.
Yeah.
Actually, from the bird's perspective, nurse was busy doing things, and it was treating her as just another animal.
Yeah.
But our perception is, oh God, it's come close to a human being.
Yeah.
And made me, you know, so we kind of separate ourselves from nature in some way. But the bird was just thinking, oh, that person's really busy. It's obviously not hunting, so I can get close.
Just as it would a cat
or anything.
Yeah.
So the animal wasn't differentiating, but no, we do.
When you go on holiday, everything is fresh and new and alive, isn't it?
Yeah. Seems much longer the first few days of your holiday.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. Because the impact of it means we're living in a very direct kind of way, and I think that's the, you know, we'll need to stop now because we need to lunch. But we'll come back to it. But that's the problem with memory is that soporific edge, really. Because it takes us out of direct experience, into facsimile experience, and that's why I think you're right, Roberta. When you're in new situations, then that I know where I am feeling is less available to you. Mm-hmm. So you're more awake, and the sense of balance is wobbled, right, because of the newness. Anyway, let's stop now because we need to have some lunch and come back after.